touchdown.
I say he spikes it that way. Gives him another.
We're at the 1 yard line.
Chance to make the right call.
Lines are set. Leinart sneaks towards the goal line. He's in the end zone. Touchdown, USC!
Hey, USC fans, it's time to get into the game with the Peristyle Podcast. Every week, you can get your Trojan football fix as the USCFootball.com staff brings you the latest on the USC football team and the inside scoop on recruiting. And now, here are your hosts of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham.
Welcome back to Episode 3 of the Peristyle Podcast. If you want to ask us a question or have any comments, you can always email us at podcast@uscfootball.com, and you can now download the podcast on iTunes. Just search for USC in the podcast section. The first segment, we are joined by fullback Brandon Hancock. Brandon, how are you doing today?
Great, Ryan, man. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming and joining us on the phone. You had a very popular article this week on uscfootball.com talking about the offense. So we wanted to do a little Q&A with you. First up, obviously, is the biggest position battle of the spring is going to be on the quarterbacks. Just wanted to get your thoughts on what you've seen of these guys and how you think it's going to turn out.
Well, there's no question that's definitely going to be the hottest contest going into the spring. And there's all on the line. If you think back to 2003, there was pretty much a three-man battle there between Brandon Hance, Matt Castle, and Matt Leinart. And, things didn't really shake out, but spring played a big role in having Leinart come up and earn his stripes. And as we all know, he went into the season and really took over as a starting quarterback against Arizona State. But the two guys coming in, I think the front runners, as we would all expect, they're going to be Mitch Mustain and Mark Sanchez. And, both these guys possess an incredible amount of raw ability. I think from a prototypical quarterback, pocket passing quarterback standpoint, you're going to look at Sanchez and say, well, he's probably a little bit better equipped. He's a little bit taller. He has a fantastic arm. He can get outside the pocket too and run on bootleg and still hit his targets. But I think the biggest plus he has going for him is the fact that he has been in the system for the longest amount of time. He started under John David Booty, and he's had the longest, connection with his receivers and the rapport and the timing and stuff there should definitely play to his favor because he's been in the system as a black shirt himself with them. For Mitch Mustain, though, he's demonstrated a fantastic ability to assimilate into this offense quickly. Week to week on the scout team, here's a guy that had to learn a new role, come in and execute it, almost like being an actor in Hollywood and improvising. But he did a fantastic job no matter who he was trying to emulate. And you saw a very strong link and connection with him and Damian Williams, and that duo there proved very threatening even against the starting defense of USC last year on the practice field. So for Mitch, the biggest thing that he has, I think, in his favor is that he's extremely mobile. He's got more top-end speed, in my opinion. And, he's just he's a gamer. He's a guy that makes plays, and he exploits opportunities that the defense leaves out there on the field. But in any case, as Coach Carroll has always said, it's kind of the mantra I wrote about in the article, that the depth chart is always written in sand, never in stone. And this is going to be a week-to-week battle all the way until, I would imagine, probably late into fall camp, where these guys are going to have their chances to make a big impression. Their window of opportunity will come. It's about them stepping up and shining. Whoever puts together the best package here in spring is going to go into the fall camp with that extra confidence and probably, the front seat for leading the offense here before we kick things off here late August.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch. I still remember back when Leinart won the job, and I realized how good of a talent evaluator I was when I thought that Matt Castle was going to win, and obviously he did not. But, he ended up going to the NFL, so he must have been pretty good, I guess.
He still brings it. But, the fun thing about that is I didn't mention just a moment ago, but not only Mitch Mustain, Mark Sanchez, but Aaron Korb, he was kind of the guy that he was kind of a Matt Leinart of this class. So, you got to keep it on him too. And he's a guy we all know can really slice and dice the defense with his feet. He's got an arm too. I know he's kind of a little bit of the underdog here, but sometimes it's a good situation for a quarterback to be in because they can go out free of inhibition and go let it fly and just see what happens.
Yeah, it looks like he's developed a little bit from his freshman year last year, but I think he still has a ways to go. But, who knows? Anything can happen out there. But let's switch up to the big uglies up front. Guys blocking for the quarterback. They lose four of the starters. What are your thoughts there on what they're going to do to try and replace those guys?
Well, there's got to be a lot of voids left there that need to be filled. And, the one thing that you can count on that I like is that, Christopher O'Dowd is a guy who had starting experience. He played a lot last year. I mean, he's going to come back, you know, more or less a redshirt type of freshman player with, you know, I think 4 good years ahead of him. He didn't burn an eligibility year, if I recall correctly. But in any case, this guy, you know, he demonstrated a tremendous amount of integrity and poise and calm coolness. And he learned the offense better than most people would have thought. You know, with Matt Khalil departing and other people going down last year, he stepped in and did a phenomenal job when they called on him. So he's ready to go, and I think that he's definitely a lock on that spot. Jeff Byers, in my opinion, will be the guy that has to step up as the vocal leader. He has the most experience playing. He's a guy that has a tremendous amount of downfield hustle. He leads by example. He works harder than just about anybody I've ever seen in that weight room. So he's a guy that the younger people can definitely learn from and take a little bit of his wisdom and discipline and apply that to their own game. Additionally, you know, Butch Lewis stepped in. The one thing they got going for him is a lot of these guys, even though they haven't been starters in a big role, they've all contributed rather significantly at one point or another during their playing careers. You know, Charles Brown has seen Lewis. And, you know, Nick Howell, too, has been in games quite a bit. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of room that's going to be available there. But it's just going to depend on these battles coming up here in the future. But I'd like to say, you know, Butch had a phenomenal, when he came in last season for the games he had to fill in for Sam Baker, he did a great job. You know, he knew his stuff. He dominated the line of scrimmage. He's got good feet, on a lot of good size. I think Nick Howell's come a long way in his development. And he's a guy that naturally is built as a premier tackle. And, you know, I guess it's probably going to be that right guard spot that really is where there's going to be the biggest, you know, head-to-head confrontation there to get some playing time.
Yeah, one of the wild cards here, people ask about all the time on the message board, is Thomas Herring, just because he's so big, 6'6", 320 right. or so. And have you got to see much of him, and what are your thoughts about his development so far?
You know, he's come a long way since he came in here, first and foremost. You know, Thomas came from a little bit of a tougher background, and it took him a while to kind of buy in and understand how the system works and to trust in it and believe it. And, you know, some guys you see come in, they're a little bit recalcitrant. They don't want to listen to authority just right away, but he's definitely seen the light, you know, and he's matured tremendously. His body's matured. The one thing that's really hampered him is just he's had a string of injuries that have kept him from getting a lot of live action on the field, and he's missed a lot of practices. But there's no doubt in my mind, I mean, he has the physical attributes to be a dominant force out there. But I think the real battle is going to be between his ears, making sure that he can fully, you know, comprehend the offense, execute it, you know, make decisions on the fly, make the reads, and do the right thing. Because, as you know, I mean, you could be a great athlete, you could run a 4.5 versus the guy running a 4.7, but if you're running 4.5 in the wrong direction, it's not doing anybody any good. So, in this case, you know, he's a guy that has all that stuff, but if he can really hit the books and do well, he's going to be right up there, and he'll be looked at and evaluated by the coaches, and he'll have his opportunities to really step in and do his thing.
Now, you talked before about the depth chart being etched in sand and not in stone. I mean, if you look at the skill guys, receiver and the tailbacks, I mean, there's just so many bodies and so many really highly right. ranked bodies, 4- and 5-star guys everywhere. And how do you think this is going to shake out in the spring? Are they going to be able to pick, like, the top couple guys in each group, or is it still going to be a progress all the way through fall camp?
I would imagine it's going to be dealt with, you know, just the same way it has been in the past. It's going to be a continual evaluation process. The coaches, they account for everything, not just on the field, but they watch these guys in the off season. Who are they hanging out with? What are they doing on their free time? Are they coming to watch tape? Who's putting in extra hours in the weight room? These little things add up, and they count for something in the long run. And character is a big part of it too. But this in the spring now, I mean, it's their job to shuffle the cards, you know, put the piece of the puzzle together to find the best combination of what's going to work and what won't. I think that they'll get a loose idea. But this time, too, also is a time to get guys that haven't got a lot of experience, to put them in with the first-team unit, let them grow up a little bit, if you will. You know, get these guys live-action reps with the big dogs, you know, help them gain confidence, gain maturity. So I think you're going to see a lot of rotation, as usual. There's going to be fluctuations with guys here and there. Some guys get nicked up, but you know, there's definitely going to be front runners for each spot. And there's guys that have experience out there and have done good things. Wide receiver in particular, you know, I think Vidal Hazelton's come a long way. Patrick Turner is again, going to be the voice and the leader. But, you know, Ronald Johnson's a guy I would really look forward to seeing how he comes along and develops through his progression there and getting coached up by all the new guys and stuff. So, I mean, there's a lot of – and it's same with the running back position. There's so much – so many bodies, as you mentioned, especially with Mark Tyler and Broderick Green coming back, adding some beef to the backfield. It's going to be really interesting to see how that shakes up. And you got C.J. Gable in the mix. And, you know, there's so many options and opportunities. It's just these coaches are eager to get out there and unwrap the new toys that they got and put them to use and see how they all perform.
Yeah, I mean, you could mention your top four or five guys at the position and still leave out some really big names. It's pretty funny. Maybe we should talk a little about the fullback since that's the position you played. What do you think of Havili? And there's not too much depth behind him, it looks like.
You know, really, you're absolutely right. There's not a lot of depth of because he's a unique individual in the sense that he can get a lot of things accomplished in one body. Ideally, a fullback in this type of offense, you know, it's the same offense that Norm Chow recruited me for, is a guy that has the ability, who's multifaceted enough to get down 3-point and dig linebackers out of the hole, who's going to get his face dirty, block, who can pass protect, who can catch, who has enough speed to run. And Stanley's a guy who has vision, too, who I think, you know, at times can make a motion, you know, Joe McKnight or someone out of the backfield to line up as a receiver spot, put him in a single back, you know, formation, let him carry the ball, too. I mean, he's a guy, he was a tailback in high school, and I've seen him run. I wouldn't be shocked to see that happen, but it's very rare to find someone like Stanley that can encompass all of those, you know, qualities and attributes. I think that there are some good guys behind him. John Blank on the name of the one young man who walked on, Adam Goodman, I believe.
Adam Goodman, yeah.
Yeah, he's proven himself. I mean, this guy's a battler. You know, he's scrappy and tough, and he gets in there, and he's going to be a guy who, if I want to draw a relationship, would be kind of like a Lee Webb, a dude that's more like a bowling ball they're going to put in there that can, you know, really, really move the line of scrimmage and hit guys and clear holes for running backs. But you're right. I think that there's definitely opportunities there, and if Stanley does get hurt, it's going to affect the offensive production, because without a fullback that can do things like him, you have to start designating people that specialize in either blocking or receiving, and then defenses can start identifying what you're going to be doing based upon the formation you come out in and who's playing that spot. So Stanley's come a long way. I'm extremely excited to see his production and what he's done for this team. He's only going to get better and better. And having, you know, a fullback like him and a tight end that can do both as well as a deadly combination, it really opens this offense up.
Yeah, all right. Well, hey, thanks, Brandon, for your time and joining us for this first segment. Actually, you can stay tuned to USCFootball.com. Brandon's going to be doing a preview of the defense. And to give you a little preview of that preview, I actually talked to Kevin Thomas. He was kind of a big topic on the message boards. Everyone was wondering about his ability to cover guys and how he's going to come back from his injury. So I talked to him on Tuesday after the workout, and you can hear that interview now. But before that, thank you very much, Brandon, for your time.
Always fun, man. Thanks a bunch.
All right, we're here with Kevin Thomas, otherwise known as Keto. I just wanted to get an update on your injury and how the rehab's going and how you're feeling out here.
I feel great. The rehab, you know, is pretty much done. All that's left is to really, you know, focus on the weight room, get strong, all my motions back. And so now it's just time to use it, put it to work.
Can you kind of describe the injury for people that don't know what was going on there?
I had a torn labrum, and my shoulder was loose in the front and back socket. So pretty much just reconstruction of my shoulder. Had to tighten it up for me.
Now, they're regarded as one of the better cover corners out here. Are they doing anything different? It looks like you guys are looking for the ball a little bit more in these drills leading up to spring ball.
Oh, yeah. You know, the main thing at corner is, you know, make plays, be a playmaker. And the only way you can do that is finding the ball. So, I mean, I know I pride myself, you know, trying to find the ball and make plays. And I'm sure the other corners and defensive backs do as well.
They're pretty deep at receiver there. What are they doing to prepare for spring football? You guys got a lot of big guys over there got to face.
Yeah. What are we doing? Yeah. Pretty much, you know, trying to find another intern for coach. So basically all we've been doing is working on our, you know, footwork, you know, working on coming out of our breaks, you know, same old stuff, just trying to, you know, build up as a group. And when spring comes and it's time to guard those guys, our feet will be right, because that's basically what matters the most, your footwork.
And we saw Chris Richard, former DB, out here. He's working with you guys a little bit, yeah?
He was here, what was it, last Thursday?
I think so.
He was out there, and today we had another guy. So I think they're kind of, you know, just giving the guys chances to find out who they really want for the position.
Now, Josh Pinkert's another guy coming off an injury. Do you think he's going to be with your group or safety, and how's he feeling?
I honestly don't know. He can play either or. You know, everybody knows he can. But it's pretty much whatever the coaches feel is necessary. I'm thinking he's going to play corner, but, you know, it doesn't really matter. I just hope he's healthy and, you know, he's performing at his best.
Now, Terrell Thomas left for the NFL. Yeah. You're looking to replace him. Did you get to watch any of him at the combine today and see what was going on?
I woke up early in the morning to watch him today. He had a really good 40, and I only saw him do a couple drills, but when he did it, you know, he looked really smooth and fluid, and he looked good.
That's a money position, though. So, I mean, you know, if you can cover guys, you can get paid in the NFL.
And they take a lot of guys in the first round at corner, so, you know, everybody wants that.
Sweet. Well, hey, thanks for your time and good luck.
I appreciate it.
Stay tuned for more of the Peristyle Podcast from Los Angeles, California.
USC Trojan fans. To get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com, the officially licensed Southern Cal site of the Rivals.com network.
And now, welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com.
All right, we're back at the Peristyle Podcast. Remember, if you have any questions or comments for us, you can email us at podcast@uscfootball.com. This is Ryan Abraham, and in this segment I'm going to be joined by the coach, Harvey Hyde, over the phone. Coach Hyde, how are you doing today?
Hey, I couldn't be better. You know, I was born ready. Whenever you want to talk about football, Ryan, you got to be ready. I'm ready to play. You know, you never know when I'll get that last kickoff coverage.
No, you're bringing your A game every time. We appreciate that. And today we're going to talk about spring football a little bit and kind of get your feeling on what you think this team needs to work on this spring.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, first of all, when you have great players, you try to improve these great players, and you have these great players compete, as Coach Pete Carroll really does. Competing daily against the best players in America makes you a better football player. You don't have to compete just once a week like a game, but you compete every day in practice, not only during spring practice, but during the year. But if you'd like me to go down and look at the different positions and tell you what I think the Trojan football staff will be looking at and trying to develop during the spring, I will do that.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, I think we can probably the most interesting battle this spring will probably be a quarterback. You know, obviously Mitch Mustaine and Mark Sanchez are the two front runners. Aaron Korb's more of an athletic guy. Looks like he still needs to develop a little bit, but I guess we could start there and get your thoughts on that.
Well, let's look at the quarterback position. First of all, you're so fortunate to have great competition at quarterback because these guys will make themselves better. They're competing now when they work out in the weight room, when they work out throwing to the receivers, when they go to meetings, when they look at game films, they try to learn from each other, plus they're competing. They'll help each other, yet when they get on the field, it's, hey, man, I'll tell you, this is my turn and I want it. So when you have great competition, these guys are winners. First of all, they wouldn't go to USC unless you want to play for a national championship. Winning the Pac-10 is something that you want to do, but winning the national championship is why you go to USC. Now that I've said that, that's why Mustaine's there, going there. That's why Barkley's already committed. That's why you've got Aaron Korb, and that's why you've got Sanchez there. So I think what's going to happen in the spring, I think the coaches are going to try to find what quarterback best fits in with what they do offensively at SC and find out what form of offense will fit these quarterbacks. I mean, remember, it's got to be something that they can do together. It's got to be something that if you lose your starting quarterback, the backup quarterback is in a position that they can still perform the duties that the first team quarterback has done. You don't want to change your offense. For an example, take a look at Oregon this past year.
Right. That was
they lost Dixon, and all of a sudden, Reed Leifer came in, and it was a complete different deal. They lost their whole season. I think they lost five or six straight games until they went to the bowl game.
It was amazing that they would have a backup like Leif for Dixon when, you know, I guess they weren't exactly sure what offense they were going to run. They brought in that offensive coordinator from New Hampshire, I believe it was. So it's probably going to take them a while to get a bunch of quarterbacks that are similar to Dixon. So when you do have a guy go down, you know, they're going to be able to step in and perform, you know, as well in the same offense without changing things.
You're exactly right. And SC has done that. They have the same type of athlete at quarterback. They're all about the same. I think Aaron Korb's a step faster than the others, but they're all tall. They're all big. They love to throw and they're intelligent quarterback. So I think what will be happening in the spring at USC, they'll be battling to see who will have the edge, who's going to get the edge in going into fall camp and opening on the road at the University of Virginia. Because when you come back, I know Coach Carroll will say, I'm not quite sure, we'll decide in the fall who's going to be our starter. But in the minds of the team and in the minds of the coaching staff, they're looking for the leadership that the team looks at to be their leader in the fall when they start fall camp and go on the road. Because remember, the Trojans have a big X on their chest. They're the team that everyone looks forward to playing. They're the team that will sell the ticket. So they are a show that's on the road, and I'll tell you, that's what they're going to look at. They're going to look at who is the leader, who is the one that best performs it, who does the team look to, and who the staff gets confidence in and sees that confidence in. So they are looking for that type of leadership, and the eyes of the offensive linemen and receivers, when they look into the eyes of the quarterback and say, hey, I just heard what he said, so we're going to do it. We're going to follow his direction, as they did with Matt Leinart, as they did with Carson Palmer. If you remember when Matt Leinart played, I called him the 12th man on the field. He would wave off signs and run his thing,
yeah,
and the players listened to him. And I think this is what they're looking for.
Yeah, I think, you know, they got two good guys to choose from, at least at the top, with Mustaine and Sanchez. It's actually, apparently it's Mitch Mustaine's birthday today, so happy birthday goes out to him. Mustaine's got 8 starts in the SEC. You know, Sanchez got 3 starts in this program. So it should be a great battle. We'll have to see how it goes. Do you give Sanchez the edge right now, unless Mustaine really outplays him in the spring?
I would say you have to. He's been there. He knows the offense. I think that Mustaine got a lot of turns in the spring, though. Remember, when you're the scout team quarterback and you're going against the top defense or one of the top defenses in the country every day, throwing against that secondary and those linebackers, you get better. You get better every day because you're servicing the defense. So Mustaine didn't really miss that much. He just was everybody else's quarterback. But he got a lot of throws against a great defense. When the breaks were there, he saw how they reacted. So he got better this past year. Not playing in the games, but he's got the game experience, but he got better going against a great defense. People forget that.
Yeah, and he, you know, obviously he played against a lot of really good defenses, a lot of athletes down there in the SEC. So he's nothing's going to surprise him if he gets on the field as a starter. One of his teammates is actually Damian Williams, his former teammate from Arkansas and Springdale High School, and now his current teammate again. I talked to Mark Sanchez earlier. He thought that Damian Williams was if not the best, then one of the best receivers they have right now. And we, you know, Trojan fans haven't got to see a lot of him. What do you think about this receiver group as a whole? No one really left. Pretty much everyone's coming back, but they kind of underperformed last year.
I think they did. I think what they're going to really work on this spring is the receiver group. I think this is the group that has to improve the best. Or the most, let's say. I think they have to work on their blocking. I think they have to become complete players. You know, when you talk about a complete player, you talk about a player that's a great receiver, can make the clutch catch, can dive for the football, does not drop footballs, and when it's a running play called, go out and give 100% effort on blocking the opponent who you're supposed to block. And I didn't see that. Not that I'm being critical, but young players don't know what the complete role is. The complete role is being a complete football player. You're evaluated when you run off the field, you run off the field, when you block, when you run, when you know the route is not coming your way, but you run that route as hard as you can or harder, because you might become the primary receiver if everybody else is covered. So I think this group of receivers has the talent, but they're waiting for the game breaker to break out. Who's going to be the game breaker? Who's going to be the guy, Steve Smith? Who's going to be the Mike Williams? Who's going to be the Jared? Who is going to be that guy? I didn't think we had that guy last year, when I say we, USC. So I think they're going to try to find that, whether it's a Patterson, a kid that redshirted. Is it Williams going to be that? I think Patrick Turner got to really step up now and be the player that everybody anticipated to be. Asbury, I think, started to improve towards the end of the year. Carswell is a guy I really like. I really like Brandon.
He looked really good in those. When you're talking about Mustaine doing well in the scout team drills, Carswell was his favorite receiver during that time.
I tell you, I thought he looked great in fall camp. I really did. And he's a 6'2", about 185-pound receiver, and he's got good team speed. And you got to have team speed to be respected deep, like Johnson. I think Johnson's got to step up. He's got to get his turns. Ronnie Johnson's a great player with Williams and Johnson, and then you've got Carswell and Patterson, who was hurt last year, back. These are game breakers. In the receiver department, you've got to get somebody who's the home run guy. And if you can get 2 home run guys, now you've really spread the field. Now you've really put the secondary in a position where, wow, I've got to play pass before I come up and support on the run.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And I think that'll open up Patrick Turner's game. And, you know, him being a senior, everyone's kind of expected big things out of him being the next Jared or Mike Williams. Obviously, that hasn't really materialized yet. He's been good, but not great, and I think there's some pretty high expectations for him going into his senior year, too.
Right, and Ryan, I don't want to forget Vidal Hazelton. I thought last year that he improved the most, and towards the end of the year, I thought he was the closest thing to a game breaker, the closest thing to making a catch and then making extra yards after the catch. I really did.
Yeah, he did really well the yards after the catch. I think his most memorable one was against Notre Dame where he caught that ball, I think, on the left sideline and ran it all the way in. He actually had a stomach injury, and he should be okay. He's not taking part in the workouts right now. He was just down there at USC yesterday, but he will be. He says he's going to be ready for the spring, and he probably improved the most out of any of the receivers last year.
I agree 100%. And remember, players want to get back and compete. Players want to get back and play. That's why they're at USC, for the competition. But you don't want to bring a player back that's hurt too quickly. When you do that, you could lose them for the entire year.
Yeah, they have enough receivers. If Vidal's not 100%, no reason for him to go this spring. I think he's proven enough in the fall, and he'll be able to do that again this fall. So
I agree.
All right,
agree.
So let's look at the running backs, another big group. You lose Chauncey. You lose Desmond Reed. Those guys are out of here. Fullback, you have Stanley Havili. He looks like he's pretty solid in that spot. But there's a lot of guys vying for time at running back. I mean, everyone knows Carroll loves Joe McKnight and his ability to make plays and maybe use him in the slot a little bit more. But who's going to emerge as that number one guy? Is it going to be Stephon Johnson or C.J. Gable again? He's coming back. What do you think?
Well, I'll tell you, the first thing I think that has to happen with the running back situation, I think this spring going into the fall, is they've got to understand that everybody's not going to play. I think you've got to have a meeting with the offensive backs, and you've got to say, we've got great competition here, but it isn't going to be a recreational program. It isn't going to be where you're in one play and out one play, and you're in another play and you're out one play. First of all, you never get a feel of playing football. You'd never get a feel of reading your blocks, or if you run the one play wrong and you know what you did wrong, you might never get a second chance to run it again the right way. So you've got to get down, you've got to cut it down to four backs, maybe three tailbacks and one fullback or two fullbacks. Now with Broderick Green, you might have two fullbacks and, yeah, and two tailbacks because he's a great back along with Mark Tyler. These might be two of the best bats along with Joe McKnight that are there, and I think you have to have a tailback that can be a receiver, but you have athletes that can do that. So you've got to work on the catching of the backs, and you've got to also utilize the fullback in not just routes as a split receiver, but routes down the seam, routes, curls, complementary flat routes, out of the backfield, not necessarily as a receiver as USC used them last year. A lot of catches that Havili got last year, he got him as a split receiver, and he dropped a couple and got a couple intercepted on tips and so on because he's not a receiver, but he causes stress. And when I look out there and I see him out there, if I'm a defensive back, what I'm going to do is come up and bump him and play him man because I'm going to disrupt him, get him off his route so you don't catch the short pass, and he's not going to run by me. So I think it limits you offensively, but when you put him in the backfield and bring him out of the backfield or down the seam with a linebacker covering you, or when you spread the field and run him in the flat and send him down the seam, I think he's a bigger threat on plays like that.
Yeah, he creates mismatches from those formations.
That's right. Rather than put him out as a split receiver, you've got great split receivers. So I really think that in the offensive backfield position, it's going to be wide open in the spring. They have a back, I think one back coming in, but they're going to play him at a defensive back, or two backs coming, they're going to be defensive backs in the fall. So I would say, hey, guys, whoever emerges here in the spring, that's going to be our backs. Now, we're going to have fall camp competition. We don't want you quitting or transferring. But you got to find out who it's going to be. You got to find a role for Alan Bradford. He's a great player. If he's not going to be a running back, then make him a linebacker, a strong safety or something. He's a great athlete. Stephon Johnson's a great athlete. Broderick Green's a great athlete. Joe McKnight's a great athlete. And you got to look at your tailbacks like Tyler, McKnight, Johnson, C.J. Gable, who will be back. I'm trying to remember all the names.
There's so many. It's hard to. I mean, I agree with what you're saying. Is trying to get a rotation of two, three, four, whatever guys. But then you're leaving some pretty highly talented guys sitting on the bench.
Well, that's the way it is. That's why you go to USC. I'll tell you, there's been a lot of great backs that have sat on the bench in John McKay's era, tailback, and so on. But you're a better football team when a player gets to play his reps and knows what the feeling is to get hit and knows what he did wrong the last play and correct it and do it right the next play and be in the same huddle all the time. So you've got to design an offense where your tailback, since they like to split the tailback and you put in receivers a lot of times, you've got to be able to run your tailbacks in motion to make him a slot, or set him in the slot and bring him back to a running back position, and be able to utilize the McKnights, the Tylers, these type of great backs, as they did Reggie Bush, as a running back and a slot, and then be able to use the Havilis and the Greens and so on as complementary routes, and running backs on short situations as blockers in the flats and seams and so on towards the tight end side or split end side, depending what the coverages are. So I think that's what they really got to work on in the spring, is deciding who's going to be what, how they complement each other, and let them know that, hey, it's not going to be a recreation program as it was this year.
All right, good points, Coach. And then real quick on the tight ends, they lose the Mackey Award winner, Fred Davis. One of the guys that I really like is Anthony McCoy. He looks really good out there, big, strong, fast, has got good hands. Blake Ailes coming in could be an X factor, who knows. Red Ellison, they really like catching the ball. And Jimmy Miller is over there as the veteran. What do you think they're going to expect of this group trying to replace Fred Davis?
Well, I don't think you're going to replace Fred Davis. I think you can replace Fred Davis as a blocker. One thing that Fred didn't do real well was he wasn't a great man blocker off the line of scrimmage. He worked hard and tried hard and did well. He was a great receiver. He was a mismatch in the secondary, okay? He was a split receiver that they brought down and taught him how to block, okay? And I think that's his one shortcoming in going into the NFL is his blocking ability, and I think he's going to work on that and get it and get bigger and stronger. So I think you've got to work on the blocking, plus you've got to have that same threat that Fred Davis gave you. Will you have that same threat? No, absolutely not. I don't think these guys are first-round draft choice potential, but I think that you can complement them and you can do things with them to help them become great tight ends by doing routes and doing things that they can do. Fred Davis could run, go deep. Fred Davis could do everything. So you run more drag routes, you run some curl routes to the open area, you do some wide delays, you do some straight arrow routes out to the flat. You do things that more tight end, you make it more of a tight end type of offense until one of these receivers emerge as a guy that's a complete player. Now, the young kid you mentioned from Orange Lutheran is a great athlete.
Blake Ailes, yeah.
Yeah, and I believe that probably halfway through the season, he will emerge and play, say, 30 plays a game or more. The reason why he won't play early is because you've got Virginia and Ohio State early. And I'll tell you, when you go to Virginia, it's going to be tough. You've got to have a veteran player. Not that he isn't a great athlete to play there, but you've got to go there with somebody who's been in the big stadiums with the lights on. And with Ohio State coming to the Coliseum the second week or the third week after a bye, I'm telling you, you got to have somebody that's been in the big lights, like the Rose Bowl, the UCLA game, and other big games, Notre Dame. But I think as the season goes on, you'll see this kid play.
Right. All right, Coach. Well, we're out of time for this segment, so we can talk about the defensive players next week. But again, thanks for your time, and we look forward to talking to you next time.
Good. And next week, let's do the offensive line, because that's really important, too.
Yes, we need to talk about the offensive line, too. Okay. Well, thank you very
buddy.
Much, Coach.
Hey, thank you very much, Ryan. It's always a pleasure.
You're listening to the Peristyle Podcast with Ryan Abraham and the coach, Harvey Hyde.
Hey, USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com, the officially licensed Southern Cal site of the Rivals.com network.
All right, Trojan fans, it's time to get up to speed with the recruiting blitz from Gerard Martinez.
Taking an unofficial visit to USC Tuesday night, Corona Centennial four-star linebacker Vontaze Burfict received an official scholarship offer from Trojan head coach Pete Carroll. Before leaving campus, Burfict became the Trojans' 10th commitment of the 2009 class. Although he announced his intentions of committing to USC 3 weeks ago at the Rivals' five-star academy, Burfict admitted committing was easier said than done.
I was like, it was, you know, I got offers like most every day. I was like, man, every day I go to school, it's like, those, I'm like, you got another offer. I'm like, man, he's like, so what are you gonna do about USC? I'm like, I'm going out because this was today. He was like, are you gonna go today? I'm like, yeah. So I have to wait. Till I was thinking about it. I was like, man, should I really do this? And I was really, really came to mind. Like, yeah, I think I should do this because if I do it early, you know, they can help me on my grades. You give me enough time. there, so I'm getting, you know, get closer with him, and then by season, you know, I'll be straight.
Last semester, Burfict earned a 3.0 grade point average. While he puts recruiting aside to focus on academics, his commitment to USC has become a motivating factor in the classroom.
I realize, like, you know, if I'm in class doing some work, I'm like, man, if I really want to go to USC, you know, I got to get a B in this class. So I think that would motivate me a little bit better, so I think I'll get it done.
Burfict's commitment follows a flurry of recruiting activity by the Trojans. Last week, USC added 5 new scholarship offers to the recruiting board. On defense, the Trojans offered scholarships to Alabama 4-star linebackers Tane Patrick and Nico Johnson, as well as South Carolina defensive end Sam Montgomery and Texas 4-star safety Craig Lawson. On offense, USC fans buzzed over the Trojan scholarship offer to Houston 5-star quarterback Russell Shepard. Rated as the nation's number 4 prospect regardless of position, Shepard discussed the excitement surrounding his latest college options.
You know, a lot of people keep track of what's going on with me. That's something that, you know, I really learned at a young stage. I started getting recruited when I was a freshman in high school. You know, I took my first unofficial visit when I was a freshman. So I've been doing this long, but it's been pretty exciting, you know, this last week, last couple of weeks. Like, for example, I talked to Coach Carroll, then I talked to Coach Miles at LSU, as well as Coach Mullen, the quarterback coach at West Virginia. So, every day I just talk, you know, kind of talk to different type of coaches as well. I just received an offer from USC not too long ago.
Rounding out the week, Columbia, South Carolina 4-star defensive end Chris Bonds made contact with the Trojans coaching staff. In an interview with USCFootball.com, Bonds expressed his interest in heading west for college.
I guess I always tell everybody it's a torn decision because Southern Cal would be the only school I would go to that way. Georgia's nice and everything else, but I mean, Southern Cal goes Southern Cal. And then if I stayed here in South Carolina, I'd just go to South Carolina. I wouldn't go to Clemson or anything else.
With your recruiting blitz, I'm Gerard Martinez.
And now, welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com.
All right, welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. As always, if you have any questions or comments for us on the podcast, just send us an email, podcast@USCFootball.com, or you can always go to the site and drop us some questions on the message board. We just heard the recruiting blitz from Gerard Martinez, and we are joined by Gerard Martinez on the phone to kind of follow up on some of that recruiting talk. How are you doing today, Gerard?
I'm hanging in there. A lot of news to get you today.
Yeah, there was last week was pretty busy. It looks like USC sent out 5 offers, I believe, to all out-of-state kids. What are the chances of getting some of these guys, you know, especially when they're coming from places from, like, SEC country?
Probably pretty difficult. It's a tough pull. You have to kind of wait on out-of-state guys and get a feel for them, see how familiar they are with the program. And obviously, if they're not familiar when they're offered, then if they're going to make a decision anytime soon, then USC's chances go down a lot. They offered Sam Montgomery, defensive end from South Carolina. They offered 2 Alabama linebackers, Tane Patrick and Nico Johnson. And I think of the 5 recruits that they actually offered last week, I think those 3 are probably the most difficult pulls. Obviously, they're in SEC country, but I don't think any of those guys really have any connections to Los Angeles or Southern California. So that makes it more difficult, makes the job harder on the USC coaching staff to kind of convince them to come west. And, you know, and then the other 2 were Craig Lawson and Russell Shepard, the 2 Texas kids. And Lawson's actually was committed to Texas A&M early in the recruiting process after Texas A&M had that recruiting scandal with Francione, where he was sending out, I guess, newsletters to boosters about recruiting. Lawson kind of backed off his recruitment, didn't want to be involved with it so much. Texas A&M is still going to be in there now with the new coaching staff, but he's actually pretty focused on the SEC as well, Florida, Georgia, and even Clemson he's looking at. And then finally you've got Russell Shepard, which he probably is looking as the most familiar with USC. I think that when you have a recruit that's going to do as much research that he does and has done his homework on the programs, it gives USC a good chance. He's looking at academics. He's looking at the school as a whole, not just athletics. And obviously in USC offers a lot. So he's probably the guy they have the best shot at, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's a good shot.
Yeah, no, if he's done a lot of homework, I think he realizes that you got guys like Mitch Mustaine and Mark Sanchez, guys that were like number one in their class, and also, you know, the number one QB in the nation, Matt Barkley, coming in for 2009. What are the realistic chances of him coming in and winning the job? And does he want to come here knowing that he could play, end up playing receiver or playing defensive back or something like that?
Well, he's not. He can feel like he could play receiver, and he feels like he could be a pretty good defensive back. He said that in his all confidence in the world that he could play either position, become an All-American. He does want to come in and at least be given a shot, an opportunity to come in and compete at quarterback. And I think, you know, USC with Pete Carroll, that's their motto. They want guys to come in and compete. I don't think they have any issue with that. Now, do they feel like he's going to be better in the long run being a receiver or a running back? You know, I don't know. I can't read their mind. I think Russell feels like he could do that. And I think, you know, maybe what's working for USC, Russell Shepard is very familiar with Matt Barkley. Like I said, he does his homework, he does his research. So if he's going to lose out the quarterback position at a school, why not lose it to the number one guy in the nation that year? So he could come in and maybe he feels like he's going to better himself playing against the best. And if it doesn't work out, then he's got the number one quarterback in the nation thrown to him. So it works. There's some reasons to think that USC has a shot, but he's got a lot of schools to look at. Last week, he actually just unofficially visited LSU and almost committed there. So you never know how it's going to go. It's going to be an interesting process with a kid like that. I think SC just wants to be able to get him on campus and talk to him a little bit, and then they'll feel that they have some kind of chance with him.
Yeah, I mean, he's an elite athlete, so if Pete Carroll can get him on campus anyhow, anyway, that's obviously going to be, you know, good for the program. They're going to play him somewhere if he doesn't win out at quarterback, and he could probably be the best at other positions as well. All right, so let's switch over to the linemen, some of the big guys. Five offensive linemen, five defensive linemen signed in the class of 2008. What does that leave for the class of 2009? Are they only get a couple, or do they still want to try and get some more big bodies in there?
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be necessarily a class of quantity. It's definitely going to be a class of quality. They want to get guys where they can pick and choose the exact kind of guy that they want. They've thrown a few scholarship offers out there on the offensive line. John Martinez got a scholarship offer. Obviously, they've already got Kevin Graff committed. I know Xavier Suofilo is a kid that's very interested in USC. He's going to be probably a top 100 type lineman coming up for this next class. There are some guys out there. Mason Walters is a guy that actually approached us at the San Antonio National Junior Combine in January and talked about, hey, you know, I kind of like SC. I haven't heard from him. I like a little more, you know, a little more attention from the West Coast. That's the kind of stuff that USC wants to hear. They can kind of sit back, be picky, bring kids into their camps, and then kind of decide, you know, who we want and who we don't want. Because it's not going to be a class where they can just throw a bunch of different offers out there and go after a bunch of guys. I think the last kind of bit of news coming out from offensive line is the kid Xavier Nixon from North Carolina. That's a kid that's a possibility, showing a little bit of interest in USC. Talked about maybe getting an offer in the next couple weeks. So, you know, there's definitely they can be picky on the offensive line. And with the defensive line, kind of the same thing, although I think with the defensive line, you can always recruit bodies at the defensive line. With the rotation, you're always going to use, you know, maybe six, eight guys in a game, just throwing people out there, pass rush, especially in the Pac-10 when you have pass offenses and you've got guys that have to try to get upfield, you're going to wear guys out. So being able to bring in multiple players at that position is always going to be, I think, a high priority. So probably a little more focus on quantity there, more focus on quality with the offensive line this year.
Makes sense. You can keep guys fresh, and I think the players like to see when there's younger guys getting in, you know, getting in the mix when, you know, on the offensive line they might be sitting on the bench. That's a good point there. One offensive lineman I want to touch about, he was actually from last year's class, James Wilson. It looked like all intents and purposes he had committed to USC, changed his mind, went to Florida. There's been some buzz on the boards. The Peristyle people have been talking about it quite a bit. Just want to get your thoughts on James Wilson, if he's going to leave Florida and if there's any shot of him coming to USC at this point.
Well, unfortunately, we haven't had any direct contact with James. A lot of rumors swirling around Some pretty good sources indicate that his intention is to transfer out of Florida. You know, we don't know what he said to Florida, if there's, you know, still a negotiation type period going on there where, you know, they're trying to keep him and maybe he's not feeling like he needs to be there. I think through the recruiting process, it was a very complicated recruiting process for him. He committed to USC early on, seemed very solid in that commitment, but he had some issues with his mother, didn't really like USC, didn't like him going cross country, and it's very complicated. I won't get into too many details, but it is very complicated. And I think the kid felt bad, but he had to stay closer to home just basically to appease his mother, and that's what he did. Now maybe he's having second thoughts. Like I said, we haven't talked to James Wilson specifically, but we do have some pretty good sources that have indicated that he's actually looking to maybe transfer to Wake Forest, not necessarily USC. We have had no indication that he's actually contacted USC, but the rumors have been that he's looking to go to Wake Forest, which was one of the schools I think he visited during the recruiting process outside of USC and Florida. So that's something that could be happening down the line. You know, he was a good kid. Definitely enjoyed talking to him through the recruiting process. Definitely wish him luck, you know, down the way.
Sweet. All right. Well, thanks for the information there, Gerard, and that wraps up Episode 3 of the Peristyle Podcast. You can now download us on iTunes. Just search for USC or Peristyle Podcast. You can find it on there. We're actually one of the featured podcasts under the sports college and high school category, so that's cool. And if you ever want to get in contact with us, you can always email email podcast@uscfootball.com. Thanks again for your time, Gerard, and we'll see you guys all back next week with another episode of the Peristyle Podcast.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can now download the podcast directly to your iPod. Just search for Peristyle Podcast the next time you log into iTunes.